more COVID-19 isolation facilities being put up by the Philippine government to ease the burden of overcrowded hospitals. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere will talk to us about the congestion being experienced in COVID-19 wards. India becomes just the second nation to tally over 100,000 new COVID-19 cases in a single day. Philippine inflation eases for the first time in 6 months. And an international studies professor urges Manila to change its approach in handling its maritime dispute with China. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hi, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. The Philippine government ramping up construction of isolation facilities to decongest hospitals dealing with a surge in COVID-19 cases. Health Undersecretary and Coronavirus Treatment Chief Leopoldo Vega says an isolation facility in Subic with a 250 to 280 bed capacity will soon be operational. Vega adds government will also open two isolation facilities in New Clark City for mild and asymptomatic cases.
So in other words, if we are able to provide more isolation facilities or beds and for quarantine, I think this will decompress really the hospitals. But it needs a very good triage system with the local government in trying to sort out those who are mild and of course, asymptomatic to be placed in this isolation or quarantine facility.
The Philippine Red Cross will also help cities in Metro Manila set up new isolation facilities in select public and private schools.
We're starting in Ateneo on Thursday, Tuesday or Wednesday, but we still have to put the showers, and the Ateneo is willing to give us up to 16 to 38 rooms. The general objective is to remove the asymptomatic spreader in a household where there are multi-generations.
Meanwhile, private hospitals renew their appeal to the national government for additional health care workers. Dr. Jose Rene Degrano, president of the Private Hospitals Association of the Philippines, says additional equipment like hospital beds are also needed.
We have very limited health care workers right now. We can't get any additional nurses. But usually, government will send augmentation personnel only to the government facilities.
Total coronavirus cases in the Philippines has surpassed the 800,000 mark. That's after over 8,000 new infections were recorded Monday. Latest data from the health department showed active cases stand at more than 143,000. 10 more people also succumbed to the disease, pushing the death toll to more than 13,300. The Okta Research Group warns coronavirus infections in the country may reach a million by the end of the month. Worldwide, over 131.6 million people have been infected with the disease, with over 2.8 million deaths. The province of Pangasinan bars the non-essential travel of its residents to the NCR Plus area amid the ongoing surge in COVID-19 cases. Elaine Fulgencio now joins us with the details. Elaine, go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, non-essential travel of Pangasinans to the National Capital Region, Laguna and Rizal, as well as the entry of persons from these areas to Pangasinan, are prohibited due to the alarming increase of COVID-19 cases in the country. In Executive Order number 0030-2021, issued on Monday by Governor Amado Espino, he is extending the effectivity of travel restrictions. However, essential travels, including but not limited to those by frontline services, government personnel, emergency humanitarian process, and movement of cargo, should remain unhampered as stated in the EO. The travel must present competent proof of identity, a document stating workplace address, or any proof of essential travel in border checkpoints for the purpose of assessment. During the effectivity of the EO, the province-wide curfew shall be from 8 o'clock in the evening to 4 o'clock in the morning until April 11, 2021, or until the ECQ classification in the NCR Plus bubble is lifted. Governor Espino stated that the provincial government maintains close coordination with the local government units, as well as with the national government agencies, especially with the members of the Philippine National Police who are manning the regional and provincial border checkpoints of the province. The provincial government is also formulating new protocols because of the surge of COVID-19 patients admitted both in the provincial government-run hospitals and in the different isolation facilities in the province. As of today, COVID-19 confirmed cases have reached 6,085 with 640 active cases. Meanwhile, provincial government urged the public to continuously observe the minimum health standards to prevent acquiring the coronavirus. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Elaine Fulgencio there joining us on the line. Elaine, you keep safe. A party-less lawmaker with no medical background giving away medication to COVID-19 patients in Quezon City, and that's despite warnings from regulators. Anakalusugan Representative Mike Defensor is standing by the effectiveness of the anti-parasitic drug ivermectin. Defensor, who started taking ivermectin after contracting COVID-19, insists he is not violating any law.
I am not prescribing anything. I'm only giving people access to ivermectin. Alam mo ngayon sa black market, tumataas na yung presyo. Ang daming gumagawa, hindi natin alam kung sinong peke. So I'm getting it from a compounding laboratory. There is a prescription following the FDA guidelines. And I am giving people access to that. I'm not selling it. I'm giving it for free. And hopefully, pag ito nagawa namin karin sa Quezon City, bumagsak ang number. Quezon City is number one now with 10,000 cases. We are number one in the whole Metro Manila. And if we're able to solve Quezon City, we hope that this clinical trial that we're doing will be also imitated, gamitin din sa ibang lugar, gawin din la para mapabagsak yung paghawa at saka yung pagkakasakit gumaling sa ivermectin.
But FDA Director General Eric Domingo appeals to the public to wait for clear scientific basis on the drug's effectiveness in treating COVID-19.
Most regulatory agencies like the US FDA, the European Medicines Agency, even WHO says, wait, don't use it yet outside of the clinical trials. Nakakatakot po kasi, no? Kailangan lang kasi malaman talaga natin. All of these studies are really, we're taking in all of them into consideration. I have staff who are just really looking through this every day. Kaya lang kasi dapat, pag totoo kasi yung resulta, pag ni-replicate mo siya, inulit mo siya sa ibang grupo, sa ibang lugar, dapat pare-pareho yung resulta. No? So we have to take all of them, all of the studies together.
The chairperson of the House Committee on Health warns her colleagues not to encourage the use of ivermectin to treat COVID-19 patients. Helen Tan, who is a doctor, says the WHO and other experts already made it clear during last week's House hearing there is a lack of evidence to prove the drug's supposed benefits.
I'm so sad on what's happening right now that many are using ivermectin even without the clear benefit, although there are testimonials. But of course, we need to validate testimonials. Medicine is evidence-based, it's not based on testimony or opinion. So I'm just afraid of the safety of our countrymen who are using ivermectin right now. Yes, I think that's quite dangerous, no? I know we're desperate for solutions on COVID-19, but we shouldn't be short-sighted.
All right, we'll have more about the use of ivermectin and Congressman Defensor's plan to distribute it in a moment. But first, people are dying in their homes, in ambulances, outside emergency rooms. And yet, the Department of Health still says there's still room for COVID patients in hospitals. So let's get to the bottom of this now. Joining us, Dr. Maria Rosario Vergara. She's, of course, spokesperson of the Health Department. Undersecretary, welcome to the program, and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and good afternoon to all of you.
All right, so let's cut to the chase here. How would you explain the disconnect between the figures that you tell us almost every day and the reality on the ground?
Well, the figures would show that we are tracking the number of beds occupied in the whole country or maybe in NCR. when we look at the figures, this is a consolidated figure across the different levels of facilities. And currently, these levels of facilities, we have the levels 1 hospital, level 2, and level 3. Now, when we look at our situation right now, our level 3 facilities or the higher level facilities are the ones really maxed out. But we have still beds available in our lower level facilities. That's why when we look at this number that we report every day as to the healthcare utilization rate, it doesn't really reflect what's happening on the ground because we still have available in the lower level facilities. Now, with this in mind, we saw how sensitive this kind of indicator is. So right now we are showing the indicators for our ICU utilization, so that people can get more grasp of what has really happening, how severe or how critical our situation is right now. And these lower level facilities, the level 1 hospitals, we are now trying to encourage them that we can convert their hospitals into step down care facilities to help us decongest the higher level facilities.
There's another thing there that I wanted to ask you about, bed occupancy rate and actual manpower to care for the patients that will be in those beds. I mean, those are two different things, doctor.
Yes, we understand that. And we always take into account that when you talk about beds, we're talking about also health human resources, we're talking about equipments, we're talking about medicines. So by encouraging the level 1 facilities where they already have that infrastructure, they already have their health human resources, they already have their equipments, it would be easier for us to convert these facilities into step-down care facilities. Of course, isolation facilities in repurposed buildings would be another story. And that really would, we would need to deploy more healthcare workers into these kind of facilities.
Yeah, whatever happened to those mega isolation facilities? Remember in the early days, government put that up, the private sector came in to help. Where are those isolation facilities now? We need them.
Yes, actually, we had a total of about 18 or 16 mega isolation facilities at the start of our response. But during the time that the cases were going down, the resources were not enough for us to be able to sustain it and make it operational, even though there are no cases or individuals being accommodated there. Mm-hmm. So I think 6 of them had to be closed. But right now, we are reactivating some of them, and we are also establishing more in the other regions of the country.
And again, do you have enough people to man these centers?
Now, we are trying to mobilize healthcare workers from the other sectors. Like, we have mobilized and asked the help of our military reservists, and they are now deployed and manning the isolation facilities here in Metro Manila. We also have asked the other regions for their excess healthcare workers, those regions with low burden, with low cases, so that they can also mobilize their healthcare workers to go here and help us.
Dr. Verhere, how did we come to this? 25% positivity rate, that's 5 times the WHO indicator recommendation that the spread is, you know, under control. How does the health department assess? What is your assessment? How did we come to this?
Well, there have been a lot of factors that we have identified on how we came to this point where there is this increased community transmission. First would be, of course, the variants. We all know that the variants are here, and we all know that the variants are highly transmissible. They are 6 to 9 times more transmissible than the ordinary strain of this virus. Second would be, of course, even though there are variants, if we are compliant to health protocols, we will be able to control the spread of these variants. The third would be mobility. And then the fourth, of course, we would have to look at the cycle of detecting cases until we can be able to isolate them. And based on our analysis, it takes about 6 to 9 days before we can isolate one case. And with that 9 days, the span of 9 days, a lot can happen already, and they can already infect a lot of people.
You know, we've been monitoring every single day, not just the COVID situation here in the country, but also outside. Weren't the projections there, though, Dr. Verhere? There were other experiences outside of this country that would have told us how to prepare. Because even Secretary Duque at that time, when the news of the new variants were just beginning to come out. He even said at that time, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So we had ample time to prepare. And yet you hear local officials now saying, we just weren't prepared for the magnitude of it. How would you explain that?
Well, we started preparing specifically last December when the variants were detected. The initial individuals with the variants were detected. We closed our borders until January. In February, when we started detecting the variants here in the National Capital Region, we immediately met with the specific local governments, asking them to do localized lockdowns. But after 2 weeks of implementing that, we saw that there is not much impact. So we needed to do the NCR plus bubble. And after the NCR plus bubble, still the rise in cases continued. That's why the ECQ was recommended. This kind of situation is not just happening in the Philippines. It's happening all over the world. The surge of cases, the next waves in the other countries because of this, the presence of these different variants of concern, which has led to this kind of increased transmissibility of the virus.
So to the observation that the Department of Health has lost control over this fight against the pandemic, what do you say to that?
I don't think so. And I don't think that that would be something of a fair comment because you can see that the Department of Health continues to do their work, continues our work. We are trying so much to be able to manage our healthcare system, trying so much to oversee and steer the healthcare system so that we will not get overwhelmed. These are difficult times, and this kind of comments would be not that helpful. And instead, let us all work together so that we can find solution to this issue right now.
I want to talk about AstraZeneca now. It's having problems, as you know. How might that impact our vaccination program for senior citizens? We have identified it as one that is recommended for seniors, but it's having problems. So what is the backup plan of the Department of Health in case AstraZeneca supplies don't come?
Well, right now we have the Sinovac vaccine and we have enough supplies so that we can be able to vaccinate our senior citizens. The main thing would be that the emergency use authority issued by the Food and Drug Administration specifically stated that it shall only be given to 18 to 59 years old. So we are including senior citizens here. So what we are doing right now, the FDA is currently doing a study on the different individuals that were given Sinovac here in the country, more than 60 years old, who signed waivers, just to see the safety and efficacy data among these individuals, and also studying the experiences of other countries who are already using Sinovac for their senior citizens. So apparently, according to DG Eric Domingo, they have this last meeting with the experts today, and they will be releasing the information if we can go ahead and use Sinovac for our senior citizens. So this is the backup plan to use Sinovac for our senior citizens as soon as the Food and Drug Administration would revise their emergency use authority.
So is it a possibility, Dr. Verhere, that we may just use Sinovac or order more of Sinovac while the AstraZeneca vaccines are still not here?
That is a big possibility because if this is the vaccine that is already available for us to negotiate and to procure, and then we will go for that. And so we need to really find avenues so that we can be able to have some form of evidence that this will also be safe and efficacious for our senior citizens.
All right. Now, in our last conversation, we talked about ivermectin, and you were out there warning, giving us the warning. But then you have now Congressman Mike Defensor planning to distribute ivermectin to senior citizens and those who are sickly. What is the health department planning to do about this?
Well, right now we're trying to get the details of how this will be dispensed. What would be the use for this? And of course, the other things that we need to know so that we can have a complete detail of this investigation. But I just want to inform the public. First, we have laws in our country wherein the law for drugs would be that we cannot use unregistered drugs, unregistered by FDA. So meaning, if this is unregistered, the government cannot assure you that this is going to be safe and it's going to be providing that protection that they are apparently saying. Second, the Department of Health also do not recommend the use of ivermectin at this current time because of what our experts are saying and because of what WHO has said. So we are not giving that recommendation, and therefore when people use this specific drug, the accountability would rest dun po sa nag-dispense or whoever doctor is doing this. The third would be, the WHO said it has to be used right now only in the setting of a clinical trial. So this kind of dispensing and having the community use it is not a clinical trial.
He's saying it is. He's calling it a clinical trial. That's what's dangerous.
The clinical trial is a scientific process with very definite steps, and it is based on the scientific rigor. So for us doctors, our mantra would always be do no harm first. So this one really is opposing all the scientists and all the medical principles that we have right now. I am warning the public that these unregistered drugs might cause more harm than good to all of you.
Let me just go back again. Let me just backtrack a bit about, you know, the possible use of Sinovac on senior citizens. Is that the only option? I know that there are other drugs that are coming. Are you going to insist that it be Sinovac, given that it's obviously become more accessible these days?
Well, first, it is the most accessible for us right now. But there are forthcoming vaccines also based on the vaccine plan that we have right now, care of Secretary Galvez, which we can also use for senior citizens. But right now that we know that by April, the ones that are coming are Sinovac. And this is the thing that we would want for our senior citizens to have if FDA will allow us through their EUA. So because this is the most accessible right now, this is the one that we would propose to give to our senior citizens once it is approved by FDA.
All right. You know what people might say, Dr. Verhere, that again, there's a China influence here because there are other available vaccines out there that we have granted EUAs on. And yet it seems like you're pushing, or government is pushing, for Sinovac because you failed to bring in AstraZeneca, or at least AstraZeneca is having their own problems.
Well, Carmina, it is not just AstraZeneca which are having problems right now. All the vaccines right now are having this kind of issues in the different countries because the countries which manufactures these specific vaccines are now trying to control the exportation of these vaccines because they want to use this vaccines for their own citizens first. So it is not just AstraZeneca, it is not just the other vaccines that we have EUAs with. It is a problem, it is a global problem right now. So it is unfair that the accusation or the allegation that we have these ties with China, that's why it's Sinovac that we are pushing. It is the only vaccine that which is most accessible for our citizens now. And we will not be distracted by this kind of comments that we will delay this vaccine from coming into the country and we can use for our citizens because of all of these political issues.
Okay, let's go back to ivermectin and all these other drugs that people are just willing to use. What do you say, Dr. Verhere, to the observation that this is proof that government has failed to protect the people's health so much so that they would try anything just to survive?
You know, Carmina, there are a lot of uncertainties. There are a lot of unknowns with this virus and this situation that we have. And it is not just the Philippines which is facing this kind of dilemma. All over the world, there is still no founded cure with evidence that could really work against COVID-19. All over the world, there is still no drug that can really say and with evidence that you can prevent having COVID-19 with this specific drug. Scientists are grappling, doing this different scientific rigor so that they can find a drug to finally cure COVID-19. But up until now, we do not have that. And we understand the sentiments of our citizens because we feel so desperate, because we feel that, the fear is there, the panic is there. But one thing I can tell everybody, let us not try to settle with something which is not really sure and certain that can cure us. This might give us a false sense of security, and we might be more harmed than having this benefit apparently coming from this drug. So everybody's experiencing this. We are doing everything that we can to try to evaluate all of these investigational products. But it is not just here in the country that the evidences say that this cannot be used for now. It is all over the world.
Okay. I want to go back to our previous conversation. The last time you talked about, you know, certain government officials jumping the COVID vaccination line, and you said that wasn't supposed to happen. Proper orientation was given. But now that Malacanang has allowed mayors and governors to get inoculated, does this mean that any probe on local executives who jumped the vaccination line is now moot? And after that, I want you to talk about how this might now affect our standing with a COVAX facility, because the palace itself said this is okay.
Yes, per IATF resolution, when we discussed about this, first, it's not going to be retroactive. So whoever or the local officials who had been given their warnings or asked to explain before, the investigations will be pursued. It is not retroactive, so we just start from the time that the resolution was approved. Second, these mayors and governors who were allowed to be given vaccination at this point were only a portion of these local officials, because specifically they were given because they are in those highly burdened areas, or those areas with this high risk of COVID-19 having their cases really high. So we identified areas, it's about 400 plus of them, wherein we are going to give the local government officials this vaccination. So it's really not a blanket approval for all local officials to receive the vaccine. It is only for these areas with the high burden of COVID-19.
And so how might that affect our standing with the COVAX facility? Has this been properly communicated with them?
Well, yes. The Dr. Rabi of WHO is informed about this. And one of the things that is really a measure for us to fight or to control this increasing number of cases, especially in NCR plus bubble and the other areas of the country where there are a lot of cases, is vaccinating those vulnerable people. And these local government officials were explained to be highly vulnerable as well because they are part of the response against COVID-19. So this is one of the strategies that we are employing. And the second would be they are going to be given with Sinovac. This Sinovac has been procured by the government of the country. But still, we align and abide with this framework coming from WHO and SAGE that we will be vaccinating priority first the most vulnerable, who are the senior citizens, healthcare workers, and those with comorbidities.
All right. I want to end with a projection of the Okta Research Group. It's projecting that it's going to be at 1 million by the end of the month. That's a lot of people. What is the health department doing to prepare or prevent this?
Yes, Carmina, actually, we also received this kind of projection from our data analytics group headed by the FASTER group, where they said that if we are not going to impose any strict measures about last week, they said that we might reach 430,000 active cases by the end of April. And that is comparing to about 110,000 active cases last week. So having said that, we really recommended to have an ECQ to the IATF so that we can impose stricter measures, we can cut the transmission, we can control and contain the spread of this virus even to the other regions of the country.
So would you then recommend to just, you know, go on with the status quo until the end of April?
We are trying to assess week per week. We are looking at certain measures that we are now employing. And if we see that this is going to be effective, and then we will gradually lift. We are not going to lift from ECQ to GCQ. We're going to do this gradually so that we can be able to manage better the number of cases.
Dr. Maria Rosario Vergara, spokesperson of the Health Department. As always, thanks for joining us today, and you keep safe.
Thank you very much.
Take care. All right, we have this just in. The condition of a former Philippine President Joseph Estrada has deteriorated. His son, former Senator Jinggoy Estrada, sending out a medical bulletin saying his father's pneumonia has gotten worse. Estrada has been placed on a ventilator. The younger Estrada calling for prayers for his father's recovery. The former president, as we all know, has been hospitalized since last week after testing positive for COVID-19. And we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Philippine inflation eases for the first time in 6 months. And we'll also get the thoughts of the Okta Research Group on government's plan to ease lockdown measures by next week. Stay with us. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. More COVID-19 isolation facilities being put up by the Philippine government to ease the burden of overcrowded hospitals. The health department also maintains there are still available beds for COVID-19 patients in lower level facilities. India becomes just the second nation to tally over 100,000 new COVID-19 cases in a single day. The Philippine inflation eases for the first time in 6 months. And an international studies professor urges Manila to change its approach in handling its maritime dispute with China. Back with more news. Manila takes a tougher stance against Beijing over the West Philippine Sea issue. On Monday, the Philippines threatened to launch daily diplomatic protests against China for as long as Chinese vessels remain in the Julian Felipe Reef. Maritime expert Jay Batong Bakal says now is the best time for the Philippine government to further assert its position on its maritime dispute with China.
Despite all the friendship that we've shown them, patuloy pa rin silang pumapasok. Kaya tama lang po na medyo magbago na ngayon ang tono natin na para kasing pinagsasamantala na tayo kung ganyan eh.
An international studies professor also believes it's time for the Duterte administration to change its friendly approach with China since it's clearly not working.
In fact, the situation is ripe. You have, of course, the ongoing U.S.-China strategic competition. The Chinese position vis-a-vis the Philippines is, as much as possible, let's resolve this bilaterally. Mm-hmm. Primarily because once the great powers, Quad, the United States, enter the fray, this will complicate matters, especially for China.
In business, Philippine inflation eases for the first time in 6 months at 4.5%. March's inflation print is lower than the 4.7 recorded in February, but it is still higher compared to the 2.5% recorded in the same period last year. A slower rise in food and non-alcoholic beverage prices offset the highest inflation in transport costs since 2008. Despite the slowdown, the Philippines still has the highest inflation rate among major ASEAN economies. ING Bank Manila's senior economist Nicolas Mapa also notes March is the third straight month inflation has hovered above the Philippine Central Bank's target of 2 to 4%.
I think it's too early to call this the peak, given that the price cap on pork prices expire in a couple of days. So that really was a band-aid solution to get a hold of skyrocketing pork prices. But they'll have to find a better solution for that going forward. But I think at the very least, this does limit the likelihood of a 5% inflation print in the near term somewhat.
The Philippine Central Bank says its current monetary policy settings remain appropriate even as inflation stayed above target in March. But the BSP emphasizes the need for non-monetary measures by the national government to mitigate the impact of supply-side pressures on prices. The central bank says inflation could remain above its 2 to 4% target this year. It is confident inflation will fall within its goals by 2022. However, it's still prepared to take immediate measures to make sure its monetary policy stance continues to support its price and financial stability mandate. The BSP kept its benchmark interest rate at a record low of 2% last month. The two-week enhanced community quarantine in Metro Manila and nearby areas could shave off nearly 1% from the country's full-year economic growth this year. That's according to the National Economic and Development Authority. It estimates more than 250,000 individuals will become jobless, while almost 30 billion pesos in household income will be lost. This is why the Socioeconomic Planning Agency is urging government to intensify the implementation of this to prevent, or the implementation rather of the Prevent, Detect, Isolate, Treat, and Recover, or PDITR strategy. It adds government must use this time to upgrade the country's health system. While the funds are drying up, government can no longer give financial aid to those affected due to the extension of the enhanced community quarantine in Metro Manila and nearby provinces. So they're now looking at a possible easing of restrictions by next week. But the question is that ideal? Our next guest answers. Joining us now, Dr. Guido David of the Octa Research Group. Nice to see you again, Dr. David, and welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, Carmina. Nice to see you again.
All right, so restrictions likely to be eased by next week, says the palace. But what are the numbers telling you, though? Will that be ideal?
I'm sorry, I'm losing my connection. Could you repeat that, please?
All right, so the palace just said they might lose, make that ease restrictions by next week. But we just heard your latest projections point to a possible 1 million cases by the end of the month. So easing restrictions next week, would that be ideal, Dr. David?
Well, to be fair and to be clear, the 1 million total cases is already on the trajectory no matter what we do.
Dr. David?
More or less, is already there. But what we're looking at particularly is the reproduction number. And we're seeing it decrease to around 1.53 as of the moment, as of yesterday. So it's already at 1.53. Mm. Now, easing restrictions completely may affect the decrease in the reproduction number in the NCR. So we're seeing about 1.2 to 1.3 reproduction number in the NCR by the end of this week. But this would not ensure a downward trend yet because it's still above one.
Mm, so having said that, would you see an extension of the status quo as a more ideal scenario rather than easing up on the restrictions, Dr. David?
Well, if we're just looking at the public health aspect, we would, of course, probably recommend not easing restrictions. Or if we do ease restrictions, we do so gradually. Perhaps we could move to an MECQ. I mean, that's an option, or an ECQ. There are several options for the government to take, but it will depend largely on how the reproduction number looks like by the end of this week. But definitely, if we ease restrictions severely, or, you know,
drastically,
yes, that may change the you know, the trend in the pandemic, in that we may see an upward trend again, or an upward spike in new cases. And that could be problematic for hospitals moving forward.
You know, we've been talking about this problematic situation with government officials when the situation began to worsen. And I'm sure you've heard some officials' explanation for the disastrous situation that we're in. They're saying they didn't expect the surge to be this fast and massive. But were there really no warning signs, Dr. David?
Well, actually, there were warning signs, Carmina.
Dr. David?
and the warning signs were actually in.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry to cut you there, but can you please begin with, you were saying that there were warning signs. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Yes. Sorry. I'm getting my connection is getting iffy. But there were warning signs, and we saw that because we saw what happened in Cebu City. There was a surge there, and it occurred for 2 months. The reproduction number increased drastically. In fact, the number of cases increased by 10 times in Cebu City. And this is also similar to what we're seeing in NCR. It's a little worse because it already increased more than 10 times from 400 cases per day now to greater than 5,000. So if we just applied what we saw in Cebu City and imagine if that happened in NCR, then we could already project in a way what could happen. And in fact, in our February report, we already indicated that the cases were increasing quickly, or the rise in cases was very.
Dr. David?
Very fast. Mm-hmm. And we were concerned that it was driven by variants, the surge. And this is also what happened in Cebu.
Okay, I want to know now, get your explanation for it being highly transmissible. I mean, we've been talking about this every time we get you on air, but I want you now to paint a clearer picture that when you say it's highly transmissible compared to the other variants, how exactly is it being transmitted?
Well, Carmina, our understanding is that the transmission is similar to the previous variant, except that this is a lot more infectious in that, for example, if in the situation we had before, we remove our face masks for maybe 15 minutes and we eat something and there are people around us nearby, we might get infected. But the situation now could be that if we use the same scenario, then we might get infected. This is just an example. It's not an exact illustration of how the infections are occurring. In fact, we have anecdotal evidence that many people who are infected now are not really clear on how they got the virus. We've been hearing this a lot. They said they've been following protocols. And I think, I mean, it's possible that we're following protocols, but, you know, sometimes we may let our guards down. We may, you know, remove our face mask or may not be wearing it properly. And that may be giving the virus some opportunities for transmission. And that's why, because of this highly infectious virus, we really have to be extra careful, like, you know, doubly careful, or, you know, maybe even three times more careful, in the sense that I personally would be wearing double face masks when I go out. I mean, something to that extent. I'm not recommending that for everyone, but we're just saying that, you know, let's just be extra careful. And when we go out, let's assume that everyone we encounter could have the virus.
Yeah. Dr. David, I tried to catch your interview on radio the other day, but I failed to hear the whole the whole context of it. But you were explaining something about how public transportation may be a vector for the virus as well. Did you say something to that effect, Doctor?
Any congregation of people could be a vector. Not just public transportation, but we believe, based on what we're hearing, offices are also vectors of transmission. Household transmission, of course, is one of the ways in which the virus is being transmitted now. So it has several mechanisms for transfer. Right now, it's kind of overwhelming in the sense that we're not really clear on you know, how they are infecting other people through
this virus. Because what we know right now is it stays in the air, right? It's in the air. But does it stay? Is it staying in the air for longer periods of time now compared to previously? Are they sticking to surfaces now easily, and that's where we get it? Because same with you, I've been hearing a lot of anecdotal evidence as well about how they're not sure how they've been getting infected, doctor.
Well, we don't have evidence yet that it's staying longer in the air. Droplets will be droplets, so the physics of it will be the same. If you have small droplets, they could remain suspended in the air for a long period of time. It could be several hours, actually, when they could be suspended in the air. What we do know is that this variant, this virus, is you can think of it like the analogy is like it's more sticky. So before we might pass through air with virus, but we might not be able to catch most of the particles. But now, if we pass through the same air, if we're walking around in an indoor environment, they're so sticky that we might catch most of the particles and get infected as a result. So I think that's one of the differences. We're not sure about surface transmission stays longer in the air. But what we do know is that it's a lot more infectious.
Okay, I'm going to jump to our final questions now because we're running out of time. With the way things are going, a lot of people getting infected, are we going to achieve herd immunity because of the amount of people getting infected, not necessarily because of the amount of people getting vaccinated, but actually people having antibodies because they're getting infected? Are we headed that way, Dr. David?
Well, I actually mentioned that previous. Hello. Yes. Sorry about my connections bugging up. But, I actually mentioned that previously, that if we did not have this ECQ, we might achieve that kind of herd immunity by June 30. But of course, that's not going to happen because the ECQ has changed the trajectory. We could be on a downward trend in about 2 weeks. But what we are seeing is that definitely a lot more people will be infected now. We hope we don't achieve that kind of herd immunity because we're already, anticipating vaccine delivery this quarter. We might get a significant number. If we get, maybe 3 million vaccines for the NCR, that will definitely help. It will be a big help in controlling the virus, and not just controlling it, but preventing future surges like what we're seeing now.
So momentum is key here. We got to have those vaccines and ride on that momentum, Dr. David.
Yes, exactly. So we're hoping that the momentum will be the game changer.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Guido David of the Octor Research Group, always nice to have you on the show. Thanks a lot for your insights. You keep safe and you take care.
Thank you. Same to you, Carmina.
All right. More news now. India. It's reporting a record rise in COVID-19 infections, becoming the second country after the U.S. to post more than 100,000 new cases in a day. And as this report tells us, massive election rallies being staged across India could worsen the situation.
India has recorded the most number of COVID-19 infections in the past week anywhere in the world, with daily infections rising about 12-fold since hitting a multi-month low in early February. Since then, authorities eased most restrictions and people largely stopped wearing masks and following social distancing. The country now reporting a record rise with more than 100,000 new cases in a day. Some epidemiologists say more infectious variants of the virus may have played a role in the second surge. India has found hundreds of cases of the virus variants, first detected in the UK, South Africa and Brazil. Hospitals in the worst affected state, Maharashtra, are being overrun by patients. India's richest state, home to its commercial capital, Mumbai, and numerous industries, reported a record 57,074 new cases overnight. Delhi-based doctor Arvind Kumar says something drastic must be done now.
Let's not blame the new strain for this. It's our COVID inappropriate behavior which is responsible for this rise. So I think the whole country needs to understand and start practicing it from today. Don't go out of the house unless necessary. Avoid closed people collecting in closed rooms. Maintain social distancing and never, never step out of your house without a mask.
The rise in cases comes as politicians stage massive election rallies, raising fears of further spreading the virus. India is the world's biggest maker of vaccines, and while it has injected 77 million doses at home since starting its campaign, it is lower than many other countries for vaccines per capita, including that of more populated China, which started giving shots to its citizens much earlier. India is currently vaccinating only people over the age of 45, having covered health and frontline workers first. Officials are discussing raising the country's vaccine output further. Data from the Health Ministry shows India has now reported 12.6 million cases, the highest after the US and Brazil.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it here on ANC.